What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, September 4th, 2023, and this week's episode, Strickland brings anarchy to Adesanya. We'll talk about the weekend in UFC, Cyril Gane taking on Sergey Spivak at home, and Manon Fior taking on Rose Namajunas. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news, Saudi Arabia makes a power move and invests in the PFL, and we'll cap it off by previewing this Saturday's UFC main event, the middleweight title fight between Israel Adesanya and Sean Strickland in Australia. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Double G, happy Labor Day, happy Internet Appreciation Day, and that's it. That's all I got for you.
Yes, we both live in an area that is heavily, suffers from Internet outage, which almost canceled our show this morning. But we are here. Yeah, we made it.
Double G labored hard on Labor Day to get us on the old internet.
Bruh, it's one of those. it's just one of those things, right? Anyway, I mean, let's get into it. Saturday, UFC Paris, middle of the day card for us on the West Coast, late afternoon if you're on the East, the United States, I mean. And Cyril Gane just bringing a really all-day kind of beatdown is the easy way to put it. Sergey obviously was riding, you know, first-round finish, I believe, with Derek Lewis. And I think the thing that shocked me the most was early going, how Cyril wasn't even in trouble. You know, you would have think that, okay, you know, he's coming off a loss and Sergey's on a roll and when those big guys are fresh, that's when everybody's the most dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. And instead, Cyril Gane, the movement, the speed, the shot selection, just starts crushing the body, getting out of the way, defending some takedowns. Just absolutely was in fourth gear, Sergey still in the second. And I don't know how else to explain it. He just ran away with it, punished the body, and then obviously in the second round, just really kept at it. He starts to pull away. More of the shots starting to connect and do damage. Ref stops the fight. Cyril Gane triumphant at home. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was the Cyril Gane that we know and love. The one that, you know, that performance was like all the other performances that got him into that position for a title shot against John Jones. You know, that version didn't appear, but it makes sense. A lot of different things going on in the mind when you're going to face John Jones and blah, blah, blah. But he's back to his original killer form, loose, light on his feet, completely comfortable. That's the thing that I love to see about Cyril Gane is he's so comfortable, never worried, never in a jam, never in a bind. And it's just like easy money, right? At the end there with those sort of like hammer fist wrist shots to the side of the head. Some of them looked a little like back of the head, but maybe not. But yeah, it was just easy money, man. Like those are those moments that you dream about as a kid, buzzer beater, you know, in your hometown. And this is not quite a buzzer beater. You know, it wasn't a knockout, but a TKO is pretty much as good as it gets in France. Coming off of a big loss, so it's redemption, it's victory, it's everything all in one.
Yeah, look, emphatic, I think, is the best way to put it. I mean, when you look at the, you know, the criticism he was taking for the John Jones loss and the way he just comes in and just handles business, I thought was very impressive. To go back to it now, obviously the heavyweight division, very good time, very fun time. Aspinall's coming off the win over Marcin Tybura. Obviously, Sergey Pavlovich is on a great run right now. Title fight set for November between Jones and Stipe. And now Cyril Gane delivers like this. And the quickest way for me to say it is, while that was a great victory and a great performance, there's obviously a lot of reason to be excited about Cyril. I think that the momentum, and in this moment, I don't think that propels him past an Aspinall in the title picture. And now, there's obviously going to be a lot of conjecture. Who does what if Jones wins? If Jones retires? If Stipe wins? If Stipe retires? If they both retire, you know, will there be one title challenger? Will they be two for a vacant title? All of that we don't know until November, to be very blunt. And even then, we may not know. Because money talks. Let's say Jones wins and they throw him a lot of money to take a Pavlovich fight. Well, then obviously there's not going to be, hypothetically, Tom versus Sergey or, Cyril versus Sergey for the vacant title. That being said, I do feel confident saying in this moment, I think the UFC, if you have a vacant title situation, you go Aspinall, Pavlovich, Cyril Gane. He might have to hold off a guy like Jelton Almeida or Curtis Blaydes who fight in November. And then coming off of that, let's see who looks good. Let's see about the next title challenger. If Jones wins or Stipe wins, obviously it's Sergey Pavlovich. Then we could talk about Tom Aspinall against Cyril. But before that, I don't think any of these guys should even entertain another fight because you don't know if you're going to get a title opportunity straight up.
Yeah, that's true. And the tippy top Jones Stipe, it's just so in uncertain, right? Because it's like we're expecting them to make it to the cage and fight, and then we don't know who's going to retire, if they're going to both walk off holding hands into retirement. We have no idea. But I'm also still a little nervous, wondering if they're both going to make it to fight night. And for Stipe, I'm nervous because it's been such a long time. I'm thinking about injury, and for Jones, it's just, I don't know, man. It's just
John
something always
Jones.
comes. Yeah, something always comes up, right? There's always something that gets in the way, whatever it may be. So, and maybe there's already been talk about this, and I missed it. Assuming there's a backup, do you know if there is, or if it's too soon to have one?
I think they reported Pavlovich.
Pavlovich, okay.
Yeah.
Because it would kind of be awesome if it was Cyril Gane, just because, look, Pavlovich is exciting, knockout artist, but seeing Cyril Gane be Cyril Gane again reminded me of how special and unique he is from the rest of the heavyweights. So I'm putting him back at the top there for, personal desire here to see him get a title shot as soon as possible, because he's just so different, and he was able to regroup and get back to that person. So the good thing, if you're looking at it this way, as far as heavyweights go, and MMA goes, and specifically UFC, meritocracy is, sometimes we value it, sometimes we don't. So Cyril Gane could get that shot sooner than we think, but there are big names, as you mentioned, Tom Aspinall and Pavlovich. Is it too soon to put Derek Lewis back up there? Probably, but I don't know, man. I feel like with heavyweights, you just never know who's going to get that shot next.
Like I said, I think if anything, there's a lot to like about Cyril, and I want to acknowledge that on the performance. I just think in the moment when I look at that title picture, Tom Aspinall is kind of like that guy for England, and I know they have Leon Edwards, and obviously, Paddy, Molly, and these guys. I think that they want that second star. Ever since Michael Bisping, it's like they want that guy really carrying that flag. And with respect to Leon Edwards, I don't know that he just has that, man, it's all for the country, as much as it's just like, well, he just happens to be British, so we're gonna root for him. Michael Bisping had that. Darren Till, I think, had that for a minute. I think that, Tom, he's headlined like, how many is it? Four or five back to back to back to back to back UFC London cards. The UFC clearly has him as that guy. I don't know another way to say it. And so having him in a title fight is obviously huge for business, globally. Pavlovich is Pavlovich. It's nothing to. What else could be said? He's just putting dudes to sleep left and right. Of course, it's exciting. Cyril Gane, I don't know that coming off the loss to Jones, even though this is big, leapfrog him past either of those guys for a title shot, whether it be challenging Jones or Stipe, or if they leave it and there's a vacant title situation, you know what I mean? And to your point, Stipe, when you're at his age and you're having long layoffs like this, I get it. I'd also start to worry, like, well, is this the last hurrah, last big payday, etc., etc.? It does feel that way a little bit, right? He hasn't said it. He hasn't given us indication that's how he's feeling. But then again, neither did Amanda Nunes, right? Amanda didn't talk about I'm gonna retire, but then on Saturday we all knew she was. You know, it's one of those things. So that's what I acknowledge with the heavyweight division, but it is, that's just how I see it playing. I think that Cyril is gonna need at least one more. But if he looks as good as he did, it's hard to deny him not being back in there. He's performed so well outside of the title fights, and the loss to Jones aside, I mean, Francis Ngannou had to pull a crazy one out of the hat for the comeback, so you have to acknowledge that too. So, yeah, not a bad spot for Cyril to be in, but I wouldn't say he's leapfrogging Tom and Sergey. And Tom and Sergey shouldn't take a fight with him until they know for sure what's going on with the title after November, so that's where we're at. Let's talk about the flyweights.
Got it.
Manon Fiore, Rose Namajunas. I've seen the photo. I know Rose hurt the finger on the hand. I felt like this was a very good example, good bigger person against a good smaller person. And when a lot of those things are equal, the ability to really put your weight behind someone and do more damage than when they do to you, that could be the big difference in a fight. I thought that, ironically, Rose did look like the better, more technically talented fighter. That being said, Manon just getting her shots in, they were doing noticeably more damage, and she just really was able to lead the dance throughout the fight. I thought that Rose didn't look too bad, all things considered, layoff and all that. They didn't talk about it, but she looked drastically different, way more volume, way more activity than the Carla fight, obviously. So all of that I acknowledge was an improvement. I just think she was up against too much size-wise and technicality. Manon was able to really shut down a lot, takedowns, get her spots and land punches. It just all worked for Manon for the victory. What was your thought of it?
Well, the striker, that amazing striker that we know to be Rose Namajunas at 115 against Andrade, well, not considering the one where she lost the belt, but when she fought Andrade the second time, she looked amazing, right? Movement was just perfect. She ate some shots at the end of round three or then round five. I can't remember what it was, but round three was not a championship fight. And we've seen her against Jan Jacek, Wei Li, like just the pinnacle of mixed martial arts at 115 in the female division. That wasn't who we saw on Saturday night against, or Saturday morning against Manon. She still looked good, but I think it was probably a combination of long layoff, getting used to fighting, adrenaline, all the energy, mindset, all that stuff, getting used to fighting like that at 125. For all the training you could have done in that at that size, it's got to be different, live in the cage. So she looked good, but completely neutralized because of the size disadvantage. Manon on the scale, you could see that she shrank down, cut down a lot. And so you knew she was going to come in big. You could see the definition of her muscles. Rose looked like she just, had a couple of extra cheeseburgers, every day to bulk up. Not to say that she didn't lift weights and try to gain muscle, but it just didn't look that way. And that's probably to be expected for the first time fighting in the new division. She couldn't land as many punches, and when she did, it was just like a slap versus Manon's jab, which immediately started reddening Rose's face. And that was pretty much the story from round one to three. Just harder punches, easier to shirk a takedown attempt because the size difference was great enough. I'm curious if Rose sticks around at this division, and if so, what she's going to do to get her body to match up better with the women at the bigger size. I'll say this before I toss it back to you. Most of the story about this fight has been the picture of Rose's broken finger. And I kind of feel like that takes away from this important victory that Manon got in France against a former champion, two-time champion, Rose Namajunas. So, you know, how much did that hand injury have to play in her defeat? I feel like not a whole lot, because she was still eating the punches. You know, her movement wasn't as good as it could have been. And
And she
so
was still throwing both.
she was still throwing both. And I don't think having, look, what do I know about fighting anyone, let alone fighting anyone with a broken hand in the middle of a cage in France? But I feel like if you have enough power to hurt somebody, it doesn't matter if one pinky finger's broken. And so I don't think that took away from her ability to hurt Manon if she had the ability, and I don't think she did. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah, no, it's very fair. I thought it felt like Manon was always going to be a handful, broken finger or not, for
Right.
Rose.
Yeah.
And I completely get where you're coming from with that. Rose did say she's sticking at 125. I think she's a little bit, I know this is going to sound very like quite the juxtaposition, a little bit like Nate Diaz and Conor, which is to say, it's like at this stage of my career and everything I've done, I can get big fights at a better weight. I don't want to cut and drain myself. That being said, what's the best division, most optimal performance? Still, it almost feels like she needs a 120 division, right? And I think we've got to acknowledge this. It's like, there is a reason. I know we always say heavyweights that move like welterweights and middleweights, they don't. Yes, they are fast, they are more nimble in their style, but that this is just a fact. This is just what happens when you move up in weight. There is more lumbering going on than the weight class below you and the weight class before that. And I'll tell you right now, did Manon look like a nimble, like she if she had to fight like Rose Namajunas, could she have kept up with the nimbleness and the bouncing and all that? I
Heck
wouldn't
no.
say so. And look, she's a bigger athlete. You fight stylistically. If they could throw heat like Derek and Sergey Pavlovich, promise you they wouldn't be doing as much bouncing as much as they would sit down and throw the missiles. That's just how it is. It's physics, it's biology, it's in the science, in the common sense. Now, could Rose, do I think there's maybe a tactical change to come as she goes to 25 and stays here? Probably. She did say she wants to stay. She says, I don't see myself going back to 115. I've been putting on weight and changing my body and all this. The question now becomes, because Manon was always going in on the cusp of a title shot. That's a big leap. And while there's no easy fights in UFC, there are better style matchups. And I think you now have to raise the question for Rose. If she wants to do this and she wants to continue, then are you okay working your way back up the ladder? And you're okay fighting, let's say, the Macy Barbers, the Amanda Ribas, the Natalia Silvas. Like, these are the girls, Montana De La Rosa. These are now your competition. Valentina and Alexa and all of them are probably, like, even in a perfect world, about 9 to 12 months off. And I mean, let's say she gets two in back to back first round stoppages,
Yeah, it's got to be exceptional wins for her to get a title shot now after
In
this
the short
loss.
term, if she's sticking around for a minute, she's not that old. She could certainly still put it all together. But now you have to acknowledge you've done so much, and we know this thing about Rose that, like, her I'll say sarcastically, affection for the spotlight. And it's like, okay, when you've done all these things, if this isn't what you want to do, then, does it. I think that says a lot about what do I think of you potentially staying to fight these lesser ranked girls. And that's only she and the team knows. And I'm sure we'll get an answer on that, eventually. But my point of that is that, okay, do I think we see Rose again? I'll say 60-40, yes. But I acknowledge, like, hey, you talked about retiring after the Carla fight and how you took it seriously, like how you were really thinking about it. And I'm like, well, now you're back-to-back losses. And if you tell me, you know what, I'm just not interested in the long haul one more time. You know what? God bless. Look how talented she was. I mean, two wins over Zhang Weili, two wins over Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I don't know what the strawweights are going to look like in 10 years, but I promise you, the Rose Namajunas who beat those women probably could compete with whoever we're going to see in the future.
Oh,
That's how
yeah,
good she
heck yeah.
was.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
when you're that good, I mean, it's like, what more do you got to prove? So that's where I stand on Rose. Talking about Manon Fiore, it's a very simple toss-up now. You have Aaron, you have Manon. When I break this down, one thing I would argue is that Erin Blanchfield, though she did not look as dominant, I think you can agree she defeated at flyweight probably a better fighter in Taila Santos
Heck
last week.
yeah,
Now,
totally.
Manon, 10 fight win streak, I believe this was her fifth or sixth in UFC. You have to acknowledge that also. I think you have to look at Caitlin Chookagian and how consistent she's been. Obviously, the name and talent of Rose. And now we have a bit of this flip. Now we've got to talk about. So now we talked about meritocracy. Now let's talk about business. Erin Blanchfield, she's been hyped up for the last 9 months or so. Next big thing, right? Probably the top fighter in the UFC, for the women at least, under 25 years old, or 25 and under, put it that way. I heard her talk to Brett Okamoto. They're planning to have her do some stuff on ESPN leading up to the Alexa Valentina fight. That all bodes well for your chances of fighting for the title. I'm sure she's going to be in Vegas and do some press and show face, essentially. Manon, obviously, you could argue the better, more assertive win streak. When you look at, back-to-back Caitlyn and Rose and her prior work. However, language barrier. And when you talk about selling these fights, sometimes that's a big thing. We talked about it with Tatiana versus Yan Shannan. Yan Shannan's the one on the roll, but it's easy to see the popularity and the marketability. Sometimes someone like that just makes it more accessible. UFC is trying to sell the biggest pay-per-views every time and sell as many of them as they can. So, does it feel like, hey, you could do Aaron up front, Manon after? That's certainly a possibility. So, it doesn't make for an easy, oh, she looked like this, she looked like that in her last fight, let's go. It can be a little more difficult. So, I'm going to toss it to you very bluntly. We're going to get a winner between Valentina and Alexa. Who fights the winner?
Man, it's a tricky one because if, look, Manon, did she completely beat Rose Namajunas? Like, I didn't think Rose won any round, so I was surprised by the judges' scorecards, but okay, maybe I need to rewatch it. But I thought it was an easy-ish win, right? She was landing her punches without issue, and she wasn't being hurt in return, received no damage. But you're right. Erin Blanchfield against Taila Santos, like Taila Santos was straight up winning, right? And we both had this conversation where, like, we didn't understand how, if you come to the fight knowing the result and you watch the first round, you're like, how in the heck did Erin Blanchfield pull this victory off? And so it was a much harder fight for both of them versus Manon having basically a one-sided competition against Rose, in my opinion. But there is the language barriers you pointed out. Erin Blanchfield is generally more revered, more liked, I should say. In the UFC, we all like the young up-and-comer.
The
That's,
next big thing.
yeah, the next big thing. And even I'll admit that Manon has always just been like, oh yeah, that French lady, But when I saw her fight Rose, I was like, okay, you know what? She's actually, pretty good. So who gets it? Probably, if you're saying, which I didn't know, that Aaron's already being put up to do some marketing ahead of this Shevchenko Grasso rematch, I feel that's pretty clear that they're getting her in position, right? She's on deck. So I'm gonna go with it's Erin Blanchfield next. But I feel bad for Manon because beating, well, that's the thing, man, MMA math, right? On paper, beating the names, Rose Namajunas versus beating the name Taila Santos, it's more impressive to beat Rose. But when you look at the actual fight then it's less meaningful because the competition was stiffer for Aaron than it was for Manon. All that being said, MMA math, meritocracy goes out the window. To me, it's going to go to Aaron Blanchfield.
It feels like that. I have a hard time seeing that it won't, but now Manon, we're starting to get into Bilal Muhammad, Leon Edwards, Jacare Souza territory, Beneil Dariush. Sometimes that weight pays off, right? Look at Leon Edwards. Alexander Volkanovski, people forget. He got passed over for the shinier, nicer name in Frankie Edgar before he got his title shot. You know, I don't like it, but then I also acknowledge how business works. And it's hard to see the UFC not going with Aaron. That being said, I felt like it was a layup Yan Shannon, Wei Li Zhang. So maybe, you know, we'll see it differently. Maybe you feel like Aaron could get it any time, so let's just work it differently. So we'll go from there. But yeah, I'm with you. Unfortunately, I think that Aaron passes by Tyla in this one. So there we go. Aaron passes by Manon in this one.
Yeah.
Look, obviously a good night. The crowd was fantastic. I mean, it came through on TV, and obviously they haven't had too many years of having MMA legalized in France, so you could tell the fans really appreciated it. That's always great to see. Benoit Saint-Denis, I mean, just handles business, announces himself. It was a good night on the undercard, so I do acknowledge that they had a very fun day in France, and you know, I do appreciate it being an annual thing. I think when you have a market like that with talent and just, you know, you want to see places like that get their events, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now we'd talk about global, and probably I'm gonna say this right now. There is a chance we talk about this story as being like the one that changed everything for the landscape. And I know that's a big statement. And it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen next week. It may not even happen anything significant for 6 months. But it could be one of the starts of everything. And that's Saudi Arabia making their big investment in the PFL. SRJ Investments, which is part of, the Saudi Arabia, essentially Tourism and Sports Commission.
Yeah.
The Public Investment Fund.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, so if you don't know about it, you know, there are reports going that Saudi Arabia is investing $1 trillion. Let me say that again, trillion with a T. I don't know if I even have the patience to count that much if you pay me.
If you pay you a trillion, you won't count it.
Like, if you told me, hey, I'll give you, like, $200 to count from one to a trillion, I don't know that I would do it. I feel like I would just tap out, you know, just leave the money.
Yeah, I would do it for 200, but come on, $200. Give me, like, a million for a trillion.
Okay, low-key, I'm just sitting here, one, two, you get what I'm saying. It's like,
yep.
You get where I'm going with this. I'm not going to act like I'm doing something crazy for the money. But my point is $1 trillion over 10 years in their tourism. And you've probably seen examples of this. They've, they're bringing Formula One to the country. They bought a Premier League team. They've thrown money at guys like Cristiano Ronaldo to come play there. Guys like Lionel Messi make several million and get paid vacations annually just to post about Saudi Arabia. And, you know, yeah, you get it. But look, I mean, Abu Dhabi does a little bit of it too, so that's why. But look, he gets paid millions to promote Saudi Arabia, visit Saudi, and all this other stuff, right? You see it. Look at his Instagram. It's all up there. You know, they are investing a ton of money in this. And one of the things for combat sports, these places all bid. So let's say, you know, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, Javante, Ryan Garcia, things like that. Many of these events have a bidding war. So, okay, for example, the broadcaster. Who gets to broadcast the fight? Is it Fox? Is it DAZN? Is it ESPN? Okay, then the location. Oh, it brings a lot of revenue. Vegas wants to fight because it's going to bring money to Vegas and Texas. And now you got Saudi Arabia throwing, you know, the big stick around to say, no, we're bringing it to the Middle East. And they've done this multiple times. You know, we're hearing still talks of Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk. They've held back-to-back Anthony Joshua fights. They had Jake Paul, Tommy Fury. They are making some big power moves, throwing big money around to bring these events to Saudi Arabia, making it a destination. What does this mean for the PFL? Reportedly, the investment is in the neighborhood of $100 million, you know, give or take, most likely give.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean for MMA? So, well, actually, before we get into that, I'm going to ask you, you hear this news, you know what's going on. What is your reaction?
I'm just astounded by the numbers that are being thrown around. I'm happy for PFL. I'm happy for what this could mean for current PFL fighters, for future PFL fighters, for the sport in general of mixed martial arts. I'm also wondering if UFC, Dana White, are they like pissed? Are they like, what the hell, man? Just curious. Do they ever, because, okay, obviously Abu Dhabi, that's their fight island and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Did they ever do fights in Saudi Arabia? And I wouldn't remember.
Yeah, I don't believe so.
Yeah, so they each have their own, each promotion has their own Middle Eastern alliance, right?
More or less. I guess I'll give you that. More or less. That is correct.
Okay.
Go ahead.
That's it. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah,
UFC's
so...
probably pissed and the end.
All right, so here's... so here's the trick to it, right? So PFL, for example, Saudi Arabia is hosting, you know, Ngannou versus Tyson Fury.
Yep.
Now you talk about at least two, possibly one, or at least one, possibly two pay-per-views, Francis and Jake Paul, whether they're on the same card or on separate ones. But okay, that's planned for next year. That's in the ink and paper. What having resources like that does is I think it opens up the possibility for the first time that you could have the money to lure a big name fighter from the UFC. And not that they couldn't do that before if they put all their money, but if you pull, let's say, an Adesanya, a Masvidal, John Jones, you know, these guys at the top, Charles, Islam. I mean, we talk about this a lot. It is very difficult to compete with the machine of the UFC. I mean, you fight for UFC, you have your own spirit and alcohol. I'm sorry, but you don't get that kind of muscle fighting for the other leagues. You just don't. I'm sorry. That may feel insulting, but that's just the power of the brand and what it could do for you, right? This isn't rocket science. We know this. So when you talk about, okay, you know, having this money now, what does it mean? For one, your ability to recruit on the free agent market becomes huge. Secondly, your ability to lure a fighter away. So let's think about, for example, an Adesanya or a Volkanovski starting to slow down. And maybe they're still champions at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very talented guys, obviously. But you see the next wave coming up. Happens to everybody. Anderson Silva. How much younger was Chris Weidman? And the guys after that, you know, mm-hmm. Rockhold, Lyoto. You get where I'm going. Happens. Now you have this possibility. Let's say you have a guy like an Anderson or someone like that who's closer to the end of their... you know, they've already been on top for a while and, you know, okay, they're getting to that point. Imagine having that kind of pull that, let's say, like in Ngannou, the contract expires. You now being able to say, hey, I know that I'm going to be out of action because matching rights, but then I could get paid a larger cut up front from PFL because of the Saudi Arabia resource. Mm-hmm. So let's say, you know, Adesanya, all right, I'm taking my 12 months off and I'm going to PFL and they're going to give me short-term close to 500,000 or 1 million more per fight than UFC was going to up front. I think that that's something you got to acknowledge. And because that does create this opportunity where, you know what, just staying with the UFC brand isn't the be-all end-all anymore. Because before, it was only for, you know, the cream of the crop in a special situation like Francis.
Yeah.
Now you got guys who maybe wouldn't have had the Tyson Fury fight on the table, the possibility that they could get it too. And, you know, they could get that kind of money too. And I think that is, you know, no exaggeration, that could be the thing that changes. Because now UFC, and we hear about it, fighter pay, this and that. Now UFC has to come to the table. Now they have to do this. Because why? You got that big bag of money over at the PFL just floating around out there like a UFO. And there are going to be fighters who say, yeah, when I started this, I was single and in my 20s. I got two kids and I'm married, and one of them wants to go to Harvard. I need the money.
And I have to pay his way in. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Rising tide raises all boats, yeah. So, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. This is going to change the landscape. It has the possibility of changing the whole landscape for MMA and screwing the pooch a little bit for UFC. You know, they can't stand there at the top saying we're the only business in town, we're the biggest name in town, because there's somebody else nipping at their heels trying really hard to be that bigger name or to be on par with them, right?
Well, you know, spend money to make money. Now it's like, you know, spend money to keep making money.
How crazy do you think they're going to get? Because if I'm PFL with this $1 trillion, so not, you know, not actually, but, you know, let's assume that at least 100 million, but access to more. How crazy do you think they could get with the UFC as far as these contracts go, right? Like, if they really wanted somebody, could they just say, like, come fight for us. Don't worry about the legal ramifications. We'll pay for all the lawyers to close this out in a settlement case. We just want you that badly. Like, do you think there's ever going to be anything like that?
I mean, not like, you know, ignore the lawyers, you get the money, not quite so crazy, but I'll say this. Let's say hypothetically, all right, I got a perfect scenario. Charles Oliveira doesn't fight Islam. He stubs his toe, can't make the fight. Timing-wise, Charles needs to take another fight before he gets a title shot. That fight is his last on his contract. I could see PFL saying, Charles, we're going to offer you double your guaranteed what UFC pays you to leave UFC and come over. Super popular guy, dominant fighter. You could still make the argument 1B lightweight in the world.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, let's say, I don't know what Charles's money is. He's a popular guy. I'm going to say he makes in the neighborhood of 3 or 4 million a fight after sponsorships, pay-per-view points, usually things like that.
Yeah.
I would make the argument PFL says to him, look, you tend to rake in around 3 or 4. We'll make sure you get about 6 to 7. And boom. Because imagine Charles Oliveira bringing his star power to PFL. That's a guy with a built-in fan base that fans can't get enough of, just like Ngannou. And I think it's like, you now run the risk you can steal guys like that away. Quite simply. And also, more or less, you also have the fact that guys won't just re-sign because they want to know what PFL's offer is going to be. You know, UFC, hey, you know, we really like you, you're exciting, we want to re-sign you, and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to sign any paperwork because I want to know what PFL's offer is. I think we're going to see a lot of that potentially now. That's how it would play out.
Yeah, and if you're thinking, you know, what else have we been talking about as pertains to PFL, and that's Bellator, right? And if that really does happen, so now you have this bag of cash, you know, Uncle Scrooge's vault, full of gold coins, and then you have a PFL roster that's okay, some exciting fighters at the top but not huge stars, then you got your mega legends, your new acquisitions that are mega stars, Paul, yeah, and Ngannou, And so if I'm a UFC fighter, I'm like, you know, there's money, but there's, is there competition? Is there enough competition to get me up every morning? But if you include Bellator, the top guys there, that kind of changes the picture a little bit too, right? If you're like, okay, I have a chance to fight Pitbull or AJ McKee or Ryan Bader, who's, you know, completely reinvigorated his career at Bellator. Like, there's enough big names over there that for, in the interim, could up the inducements for any UFC fighter that's on the fence. So, again, if I'm UFC, I'm a little nervous. I'm a little pissed.
Well, yeah, of course. But then it's like, all right, this is... you know what this becomes, right? This is like boxing. Because now suddenly not everyone is under the same umbrella. And now you know, look at... Do you realize, oh, why don't we get Jones and Ngannou? You mean because of politics? You mean because of money? You mean because they both fight for different companies now and everyone wants their cut? Why does this sound so familiar? I've heard this before. Where have I heard it? Oh yeah, it happens every freaking month in boxing. Now MMA is at the level we actually are starting to have this problem. Final two things on this, so we could get into the meat and potatoes of Adesanya Strickland. You know, okay, so for one, the Bellator of it all. Now, we talked about it, I believe, last week. Now you don't necessarily need to buy the whole roster. You can maybe get into a bit of a bidding war for AJ, Usman, Vadim, and, you know, Patchy, keep going, Sergio. All right, that's one. Two, I think you got to acknowledge, remember that the PFL of UFC and Bellator easily has the smallest roster.
Yeah.
And what that means, here's what their appeal was before. Shorter route to $1 million. I don't have to beat all 10 guys in the rankings to get a title shot. I mean, Leon Edwards, 10 fights in a row to become a champion. I don't know if he was making $1 million before he was champion, but I'm pretty sure he wasn't making $1 million at 5 fights in a row. That's all he would have had to do in PFL. Once you add bulk up this roster, suddenly it's not as easy to get to the million, is it? That's the double-edged sword of this. Number two, we talked about this. I don't know that they necessarily want, at this point in time, if they bought Bellator tomorrow and it's finalized, I don't know, for example, what do you do with the women's flyweights? Do you care for the bantamweights? Would you open that one, not the other ones? Things like that. And look, for Bellator, with respect, does PFL have the same kind of plans for a, you know, Tyrell Fortune or a Sumiko Inaba that Bellator did? There's a good chance no. What do you do with all of these contenders now who are up-and-comers that Bellator kind of picked up, you know, very early on? Those are all questions you got to answer. So it is not just like, oh, well, bulk up the roster, pay everybody. It's like, that does change business practices, not just for in PFL, but also the fighters who would have been thinking about going to PFL and fighting in the tournaments. Final thing I want to bring up is that the super fight pay-per-view fights will be taking place in Saudi Arabia. I feel two ways about it. As an objective observer, I like it because that means guys and girls get paid way more because the money's going in. On a personal level, I always like the possibility of knowing they could be coming to a market near me and I get to experience these things live. And, you know, Saudi Arabia is about 18-hour flight from me, so that's very difficult. So, you know, I like everything to be within the range of Southern California, but I digress.
Yep.
And look, I know there's obviously, like, a lot, obviously, you know, why do they need so much help bring things to Saudi Arabia? A lot of thoughts and feelings. For example, in particular with combat sports, you know, Let me get a beer and enjoy these fights. Drinking is prohibited in many places in Saudi Arabia, just to name a few things that are different from, let's say, the US or other countries. So,
yeah, they're going to have to undo that, right?
My house, my rules.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Is that what they're thinking? And it's like, ooh, well, you know, do you want to watch the fight or not? And let the fans decide and the tourists decide. There you go. Look, obviously, what does this mean in the near future? We will find that out probably soon, but not today. That leaves us with this Saturday, the return to Sydney, Australia, the beginning of the partnership with the UFC and Australia to bring an annual big card to the market. And it starts with Israel Adesanya taking on the UFC's King of Anarchy, the man who is rarely politically correct and not afraid to be a little crass, Mr. Sean Strickland. There are a lot of people who are going to tell you that the talk will probably be better than the fight. I understand why you feel that way on paper. I actually am going to say this. The best Sean Strickland is not a pushover for anybody. Even Alex Pereira. Knowing what I know now, I think that makes the Pereira knockout of Sean quickly more impressive. I think when you've seen how he's been able to hold his own against, you know, Cannoneer, Imavov, what he did to Abus, it's like, nah, this is a guy who's actually, you know, he's kind of just figured out what he's good at, and he's really good at implementing it. Mm-hmm. And look, I know, I get it. You hear Sean Strickland talk, and you're expecting a guy who fights very differently. Let's be very clear. You're going to listen to Sean Strickland talk, then you're going to watch him fight, and you're going to expect a very different guy. Oh, if you don't usually watch these things, promise you that's going to happen. There's a lot of casual fans who are going to be like, wait, this dude fights like what? Then you have Adesanya. And what else can you say about Adesanya? He may be the best middleweight we've ever seen. Well-rounded, dynamic, technical, brilliant, talented. And he's hitting his stride. He's coming off the biggest victory of his career, stopping Alex Pereira. He knows he has what could easily be the biggest fight of 2024 in Dricus du Plessis if he wins. I mean, what else can you break down for this? I'm going to toss it to you.
Yeah, not much else. They're completely different styles. Adesanya is just everything combined into one: slickness, agility, strength, intelligence, power, evasiveness. Like, you know, I don't need to. We've all seen it. He's awesome. Is he beatable? Yeah, he is. Everyone is. And we saw him get beat once by Pereira. Well, we've seen him get beat many times by Pereira, but once in the octagon. And Sean Strickland is this, like, enigma. Because, yeah, if you watch an interview of him, then you watch him fight, you're like, whoa, didn't expect that. Secondly, even in the cage, though, he's kind of like flat-footed. He's kind of shuffling. And yet, he has excellent defense. His movement, his evasiveness from the waist up is really special. Even his footwork, it's not typical boxing or even MMA footwork. Tiny little steps, little shuffles. Tiny movements, but it can be very effective. That being said, I think Adesanya is going to beat him pretty easily with distance and power. You know, at the end of his punches, at the end of his kicks, just kind of hit him, knock him down, finish him off. So I'm going to go ahead and just say round two TKO Adesanya pretty easily. But in general, Sean Strickland is a very unique and tricky MMA fighter. He has some special skills that make him interesting to watch. But I think Adesanya's got his number.
Yeah, it's really hard to bet against a guy like Adesanya in this moment, right? I mean, how could you not? Even with the Alex Pereira fight, it felt like, oh, well, Alex has his number. And it's like, does he? It looks like, is he changed his phone? man, it's just really, it's a really interesting one from that perspective. Obviously, part of you wants to see what would happen. I mean, let's touch on it a little bit since we have a little bit of breathing room for the first time. What does the how does the UFC react to a guy like Sean Strickland being middleweight champion, being one of the biggest faces in the company upon winning the title and being, look, you win the title, you become a decision maker. You suddenly become in partnership with UFC, right? This is a thing. This is a very real thing because now UFC does not want to promote the second best guy, and the shuffling that can happen to you suddenly becomes, a thing of the past more or less, right? How does the MMA world react and the UFC as a business to Sean Strickland at the top of that middleweight division?
They go all in on America, on America.
America.
Yeah, Murica. They get, what's that, Richmond, north of Richmond. You hear that guy?
Oh yeah, the
He's
guy with the
that guy.
beard
Yeah,
and he's like in
they
the
do a
woods in the
collab.
photo,
Yeah, and he's
yeah.
singing about how, it's so hard. And yeah, they do that, like collab with that guy. They just go all in on USA and let him just, like he's better on the mic than Colby Covington. He's not as he's funny versus cringe, like compared to Colby Covington. So I would just let him run with that whole thing. See what happens. That's how I would. Essentially, I would just tell Sean Strickland, you know what? Just do whatever you want. Just be you, and we'll post whatever cuckoo stuff you do. Because, like, I don't. He's not like. He's going to insult everybody and offend everybody. So, like, you can't take the guy on a world tour, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
So have you seen the merch that Sean Strickland has dropped?
No.
Anyway, I'm not gonna lie, it actually I get a kick out of it. I'm gonna just say it right now.
Is this like his own stuff or through UFC?
Not through UFC, he's got a partnership with the Full Violence brand, but yeah, like his shirts, he has one Grand Theft Auto one. He has one like in the style of the American Psycho poster with Christian Bale with the mouth
Okay.
open. That one's pretty funny. One of them, a full set of shirts and crew necks that say "Cancel Me" in big letters.
Jeez.
My pronouns are Sean Dash Strickland. And a bunch of hats. "Cancel Me." Make masculinity great again. Make MMA great again.
Jeez.
So
See?
obviously that invokes a certain, I've seen similar slogans part of other things before, right? I think we all have.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Yeah, right? Anyway, look, I didn't get to ask Sean this. I did ask his BFF Chris Curtis. And it's like, "Bro, do you ever say to him like, Sean, just cool it off. You're leaving too much money on the table talking like this, Like sponsors gotta be, I think I asked Sean in a media day, and it's like, does your management, do sponsors ever tell you like, dude, we can't give you money if you out there talking like this? And he said to me, "What sponsors? No one sponsors me." It's like, look, the cynic in me wanted to say, I wonder why. Look, but then he'll tell you right now, and he said it, there is a portion of the population that just eats up what he says and is on the train and they're on the boat, and agree, disagree with those things. There is a portion of people that just are down with him, and so having the UFC, let him be. I think that would be one of the funniest things ever, because it's like, imagine, UFC president Dana White, and he's going out there for a big non-MMA outlet interview. Like CNN is talking to Dana, and he's out there trying to say how the Adesanya Dreykus fight is going to be so huge globally, or something like that. Or, pick another fight, John Jones versus Pavlovich, and global this and that. And you have like a, who's a, what is it? I'm trying to think of a name. Anderson Cooper. I'm trying to think what's a big CNN name, something like that. Or one of those big, really established, really professional reporters and journalists and the news guys, right? In the studio. David Muir, there's another guy. And they say to him, "Dana, as UFC president, what are, do you stand by the comments that your middleweight champion Sean Strickland said when, bleep, beep, 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 you know, start all this. And it's like, imagine Dana White trying to explain that on CNN or another Fox News, pick one, you know, I forget who represents what, you know. I kind of want to see that anarchy.
Yeah,
I really do.
Gonna bring some, it has a potential to bring some heat, but you know, Dana White has an easy answer. He just washes hands of it and say, oh, you know, they're independent contractors and they do whatever they want.
It's like, this is the fight business, not the basketball business.
Yep, exactly. And yeah, that's I think he's gonna just, you know, he's not gonna care. Dana White, he'll just, he is very gifted. He's very good at just brushing things off, you know, dismissing things when it's convenient for him, you know, not giving it any attention. So I think it would be fine. And then as far as you said, Sean Strickland says he can't get sponsors. I find that so hard to believe. There's plenty of companies out there that would give him money for saying all the things he says.
Do those companies have a ton of money?
No, you got to do like micro sponsorships, you know, like little tiny ones. Just make like a t-shirt, like a NASCAR, you know, like little tiny ones.
All right. I get where you're coming from.
But honestly, he's very entertaining. And like I said, and because it seems sincere to me, and maybe it's not, it's almost funnier than Colby Covington, which his act is just such shtick and corny and just he can't even pull it off. So the genuine, seemingly genuine energy from Sean Strickland is very entertaining to me, so we'll see where it takes him.
Look, I mean, the clip of Sean, my question, and then Sean and Izzy going off at the press conference has over 14 million views.
Yep.
Million with an M.
Million.
I don't even, I'm low-key pissed no one ever tagged me enough so I could get a cut of those followers. But my point is, like, people are into it. I think this fight has more appeal than a lot of people may be talking about on Monday. And I think as, you know, as we get closer, I think you're going to hear that swell of support kind of rise and be like, nah, I want to see some craziness. I want to see Sean Strickland knock him out and get on the mic and say, beep, 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 you know, start, you know, get the sensor ready. I just want to see a bit of that. I found out that my clip made UFC Countdown.
Oh, nice. I haven't watched the Countdown yet.
Yep, I'm in it.
Yes.
It was a very, very... I've been on a couple embedded. This is my first time on a Countdown. I'm very proud. Oh, my goodness.
Screenshot and print and frame.
Oh, my God. I'm going to just share the clip. I got a few ideas. I'm trying to, you know... I know you guys don't know that was me who asked that unless you listen to this show, but I'm trying to change that this week, so we'll go from there. All right. Anyway, Natalie, before I let you go, you will not be here for next week's episode, but I do want to touch on it. Valentina versus Alexa 2. You've had time to think about it. General thoughts, that way we have them and we could recap when you come back.
I think, you know, had Shevchenko, even if she hadn't have capitalized on that spinning kick and gotten the submission, the fight was not looking good for Shevchenko. She was eating a lot of shots and not having any success with her own punches or kicks. But Shevchenko is cold, precision, and I think she's going to have trained her butt off. You know, it's probably the thing she needed, reinvigoration to get back in there and take... to realize that the competition has improved. It's coming after her hard. So I don't want to give away my... I mean, if you want me to give away my pick, I will.
No. We could do it retroactively next time.
Gotcha. So anyway, I think Alexa knows she's in trouble and she's going to be ready. Valentina is pissed and she's going to be ready. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Yeah, I like the way you're saying it. I think it makes for a fun fight. I will be here next week. I will try to bring on a special guest to hang and recap all of the action. And we'll get into all of it. But until then, guys, thank you for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back.